This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests. Toll-free USA and Canada, 888-429-5471. Tonight's guest, James Fester, senior editor of Veterans Today. I'm not going to go into your full background, James, but tonight's topic is Ferguson and the fatal shooting of an unarmed black teen, Michael Brown, by Ferguson police. Just as important, the actions of the police response in a militarized form against peaceful protesters. Jim, are we heading into a police state type of scenario?
Well, I think that's what this example illustrates, Cash. I really do think it's profoundly disturbing, and where the Department of Homeland Security appears to have been behind putting all this military, surplus military gear in the hands of local police, even though I understand it first began during the Clinton administration. But it's a very bad idea, because once you have this kind of weaponry, armored vehicles and the like, there's a very strong temptation to use it, even if, as in the case of the local police, you're not actually properly trained on how to use it, the circumstances under which it should be used, or the ramifications and associations that attend its use, which in this case I think have been quite alarming.
Jim, given today's actions that are going on, the National Guards have been called in. It's definitely heading towards a militarized type of situation here in the United States. It's getting unbearable, and it's, you know, they're putting it in our face more and more. I've seen posts that some of the Oath Keepers and the Veterans for Peace were out there today in Ferguson trying to help out. We need to rely on these former vets, don't we?
Well, I think we do. And it's a terribly, terribly troubling that the NSA has been conducting this massive surveillance, because while they justify it on the basis of the claim that they're trying to identify domestic terrorists, a report issued by a subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs as long ago as 3 October 2012, which was based upon its review of 680 fusion center reports, where fusion centers merge federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activity, gathered over 2009-2010. This is from all over the country, Rock, showed not a single instance, not one instance of domestic terrorist activity. Zero, zilch, none, nada, zip, which means that's a perfectly reasonable, large, and varied enough statistical sample to signify that there is no or virtually no domestic terrorism here in the United States, which appears to be one of the reasons why they are fabricating events like Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing. And this thing in Ferguson, you know, I mean, we have long simmering racial tensions that are brought to the fore. The man was shot multiple times. We've had three autopsies done. It's all very, very bad. And yet the officer who performed the shooting, who appears to have had no justification whatsoever, at least none that I or the public can see, remains at liberty. He's even on a paid leave, a kind of a paid vacation, which most of us would consider to be a form of reward for what others might view as a dereliction of duty, excess of zealotry, abuse of position, even murder.
Well, we've had that homeless guy that was beaten to death pretty much by police here in Fullerton, California. And we had his father on the show, and according to his father, it seems like there's no accountability for police officers. They're pretty much protected by the law. And I wonder if that's, you know, intentionally done. I don't feel that anybody is above the law, not even the president. And, you know, everybody's got to be held accountable. We are not holding our politicians and our presidents and our police officers and our local municipality leaders or our mayors or our county leaders responsible for any of their actions, whether it's wastefully spending our money or ripping us off. They're not being held accountable whatsoever.
I think that's essentially correct. At the very least, since the Bush-Cheney administration, it seems to me there's been a degree of disregard for the law that's been rampant at virtually all levels of the government. And this NSA surveillance, which isn't targeting domestic terrorists, since that class appears to be virtually empty or non-existent, it does appear to be targeting veterans, constitutionalists, Ron Paul supporters, NRA members, 9/11 truthers, people who might have the intelligence to understand what's going on and the character, integrity, and capability of opposing what looks as though, I mean, the ominous signs are all there, an attempt by DHS to take over the country and convert us into what is formally a police state. I mean, we could say already it is informally a police state when you can have incidents like this and the ones you're describing. We got the man in New York who was, you know, put in a chokehold. He was complaining he couldn't breathe, and they suffocated him to death. And then, you know, you get a half a dozen cops brutalizing someone. We had who was that lady who was in the middle of the street, and the cop came over, and the sheriff was just beating the hell out of her, and was unbelievable. It was caught on a video. But I mean, this is utter lawlessness by the law enforcement authorities who are supposed to uphold the law, not violate it.
Well, there was another one that was killed in New York. The baby was killed because the woman was breastfeeding. This officer came up and wanted to be Mr. Correct. And in New York, there's nothing against the law for women being topless, but yet he wanted to harass this woman for breastfeeding a child, which actually resulted in the infant's death.
That's terrible, Rock. I don't think I know the whole story of that, but that's extremely disturbing. I mean, most women have a strong desire to breastfeed. If they're capable of breastfeeding infants, it's well known to be far more beneficial to the infant to be breastfed than to be bottle fed. There are all kinds of disadvantages to bottle feeding. So it's terrible to hear a situation like that, especially involving, you know, a young child just having been brought into the world by its mother.
It's very, very ridiculous. It really is. What can we civilians, I mean, we are the people, and I was pretty much watching a program today, and I'm like, you know, we freed ourselves from the Bank of England with our Revolutionary War. And it seems like the bank has managed to grab a hold of us again, and that seems to be the main issue. Fascism at its finest is finding its way back into our country.
Well, you can't even audit the Fed, much less abolish the Fed. JFK had instructed the Department of the Treasury to publish hundreds of millions of United States notes. I recall as a young Marine Corps officer holding one of these bills in my hand. It had a red embossed imprint and said United States note instead of green Federal Reserve because he thought it was absurd for the American government paying interest to a consortium of private banks for printing the currency of the United States. He was right then, and those who are eager to abolish the Fed are right now because it has a stranglehold on our government by virtue of controlling the currency. I mean, it was Lord Rothschild observed that if you allow me to control the currency, I care not, you know, who counts the votes. I mean, it's a really powerful form of control, and it seems to me we have the occasional candidate such as Ron Paul who seeks to bring about some reform, but he is rapidly marginalized. I recall watching one presidential debate after another where Ron Paul was by far the most clear, concise, to the point The voter surveys afterwards overwhelmingly showed him to have prevailed in the polls, but the mainstream media wouldn't even report it. He got no time of day. He was minimized, marginalized. I hope, and it appears the same is not happening with Rand Paul, his son, who seems to me to be undertaking a whole host of measures that are potentially beneficial for this nation, including, in response to Ferguson, proposing the demilitarization of the local police forces, because that's a terribly, terribly important thing to do. I mean, I believe if there were any benefit to come out of Ferguson, that would be probably number one.
Jim, do you believe that race is an issue in this situation, and are the police villainizing Michael Brown to justify the actions just as they villainize terrorists?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, whether or not he was in that the store where we get the cigar story, there is a video that suggests he actually had paid for the cigars. And that the if he had this scuffle with a clerk, it may have been overcarding him when he was over the age to buy cigars, and he was upset about that. But regardless, it had whatever happened in that store had absolutely nothing to do with a shooting, and it was a terrible mistake by the chief of police of Ferguson to release it. He claimed it was because he'd had a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests, but frankly, at that point, I don't think anyone knew the existence of that tape. So it's clear that he was releasing it to try to make his people look better. But when you have this young man shot so many times, I mean, at least six times, four times in the arm, if you see him in the diagram, it's like there was a pattern going right up his arm, and then twice in the head, once above the eye and the other at the top of his head, that means he had to have been either leaning over forward considerably or even lying prone on the ground when he was hit in the head. I think that that is the most telling indication. Something abusive was going on here when you combine it with the fact the shooter, the police officer, was some 35 feet away. Now, how can you be in risk of harm to you from 35 feet by an unarmed teenager? I mean, this is part of the big picture here that is most disturbing.
Well, it seems like it's order through chaos all over again. It seems like these scenarios are popping up all over the country to incite people so they can, I guess, try to impose martial law and try to disarm. Do you think that is a factor in the near future?
I wish I could tell you it weren't, Rock, because they're very disturbing signs. I mean, Homeland Security has acquired over 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible for use in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899, because these are bullets that are designed to kill and maim. Bullets used in combat tend to be pointed bullets, copper jacketed, that'll pass through an individual, wound them sufficient to have them removed from combat, but not to obliterate their body like these 40 caliber hollow point rounds. They've also acquired a whole lot of the light tanks, armored vehicles of the kind we saw deployed in Boston, and thousands and thousands of assault rifles of the kind they're trying to deprive us of. They've entered into agreements with mortuaries and funeral homes that should there be some event. And, you know, it's supposed to be something that's unspecified, in fact, because there's no natural phenomenon, no earthquake, typhoon, hurricane, whatever, that would appear to justify this, that if there were an excess of bodies beyond what hospitals and emergency care facilities could handle, that these mortuaries and funeral homes would take the excess of bodies. I mean, that's all very, very troubling. And, of course, we all know about the FEMA camps all over the country. Jesse Ventura even has done, you know, a show or two about those FEMA camps, and it's profoundly disturbing they even are there. I mean, when you have these FEMA camps, they're for some reason, but there's no obvious reason. You got DHS, arming up, and there's no obvious reason, but there's got to be some reason. And then you put out the massive surveillance by NSA directed against terrorists, but there are no terrorists. Something very, very bad is going on here, Rock, and it troubles me. The big picture here is very disturbing.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that when Hitler was going for his fascist movement, that those camps did not only house Jews, it housed a lot of Germans that were against what was going on. They were against the German ideology or the Nazi ideology and the fascist state. So, of course, we're seeing history repeat itself.
Yeah, and there are a whole lot of aspects of the story of what happened at the end of World War II that appeared to have been concocted during the Nuremberg tribunals to exonerate the Allies from war crimes that they had participated in, including the massive bombing of the German cities, which even interdicted the railroad lines. I mean, this is a form of collective punishment that, ironically, the Nuremberg tribunal itself would conclude was a war crime. But because it interdicted the railroad lines, it was impossible to resupply the concentration camps. Those were basically labor camps rather than extermination facilities. They were located adjacent to major arms manufacturers and so forth to provide cheap labor for munitions and other, you know, goods needed to conduct the war. But you can't get labor out of people who are dead. It appears that the story of their role as extermination camps is grossly overblown and, in fact, appears to be fundamentally a falsehood, but beneficial for political reasons. And a story that has enormously been advantageous to Israel and to Zionists in promoting their political agenda, where anyone who raises questions about the actions or activities of the Israeli government, even when it comes to the slaughter of the Palestinian people, which is taking place using American-made weapons, tanks, planes, bombs. We were even resupplying them with ammunition, Rock. That's just stunning to me. I mean, these were essentially defenseless people that were being mowed down. And now, if you survey the situation in Gaza, 40% of what was previously Gaza has been reduced to rubble. It appears to have a great deal to do with the fact that surprisingly, enormous oil or gas deposits have been discovered off the coast there, and now a discovery about 5 years old, but it appears the Israeli government doesn't want the Palestinians to derive any benefit from that. So that in some ways it's very odd, but Hitler gets a bad press. There are students of the Holocaust of World War II that observe that Hitler had never issued any edict calling for the extermination of the Jews, and that his plans appear to have been rather different along the lines that I've been describing with those camps, rather than being designed to, you know, for massive gas chambers to exterminate their occupants, really were labor camps to get them to add the German war effort through physical labor.
Well, you know, it's like I said, it's history repeating itself again. I don't want to focus on the topic of Israel, even though, you know, the situation is very dear to my heart. I am a Palestinian. I know what's going on there, and it's just horrific, including that the Israelis found a loophole to get munitions from the Pentagon without the okay of Congress.
It's stunning, Rock. And I did not know you are a Palestinian, but I salute you because the Palestinian people are a very brave people and very long-suffering. And actually, ironically, those who have studied this issue recognize that the classification of an individual as a Semite is a linguistic classification. It happens to be true of all of the Palestinians, but practically none of the Israelis, most of whom came from other regions of the world, including the Khazar region and in Russia, and therefore it's odd and ironic, but the greatest practitioners of anti-Semitism in the world today are the Israeli Jews.
Well, yeah, I would have to agree. Okay, back to the Michael Brown case.
Yeah, let me give you a recap here about the autopsy, because we've had three different autopsies. The first was, let's see, conducted by St. Louis County. The results were delivered to the county prosecutor's office Monday. That showed evidence of marijuana in Mr. Brown's system. But, you know, marijuana can linger in your system for a considerable period of time. I mean, it doesn't mean that Michael Brown was high. Another autopsy on Monday was done by a military doctor as part of the Justice Department's investigation. On Sunday, in fact, at the request of Mr. Bond's family, the body was examined by Dr. Michael Badden, a former New York City medical examiner who, by the way, although it's not being mentioned here, was ahead of the medical panel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations when it reinvestigated the deaths of JFK and Martin Luther King. That panel, it seemed to me, did a very mixed job because, according to the officials at Parkland, the doctors at Parkland, JFK had a fist-sized blowout at the back of his head. At Bethesda, however, the naval physician in charge took a cranial saw to his head and enlarged the wound to try to make it look more like something that could have been caused by a wound from behind. But there were two witnesses there at the time, including Thomas Evan Robinson, who had prepared the body for the funeral, and Ed Reed, who was a hospital technician. The odd thing about the HSCA medical panel is it concluded there'd been a shot that entered right at the crown of the head. So what happened to that massive blowout from Bethesda, or the smaller but fist-sized blowout to the back of the head? Michael Badden headed that panel, and I hate to raise the point because I'm actually very confident that what he said here is accurate about the four rounds in his arm and then the two shots that Michael Brown had suffered to the head. I'm not acquainted with exactly the details of a shot that hit him in the vicinity of the eye. One would have supposed heretofore that could have been a fatal wound, but it's clear, and he reported that the wound to the top of his head, which had to have been when he was either slumped over or prone on the ground, was the fatal round. And again, I reiterate, since this officer was 35 feet away, I mean, there's no possible justification on the ground that he was in fear of his life.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So what next? What can we expect next from
I think it depends how it plays out. You know, they had this Captain Johnson from the state police who came down. He's a black man. He's very competent. He's from Ferguson originally. And Friday night, he was able to calm the storm. But then, you know, and it may be that there have been provocateurs. Actually, Rock, I've been told, I don't have the source for verification, but from someone in whom I have great confidence, that DHS has been behind this and they're trying to provoke matters so that there will be a more dramatic confrontation insofar as it's eager to have some kind of justification to you know, call for the imposition of martial law, not just in Ferguson, but St. Louis and other regions of the country. And I think, you know, it's like one of these cases of trying to be very provocative, just as the Ukrainian government, which is a puppet government installed by the United States, when the legitimate leader of the Ukraine was forced to flee to Russia, to provoke Russia into taking some action in Ukraine that could then call for some massive response.
That's been going on all over the world. They've been provoking and taking out governments that are not willing to work with the so-called bankers and you know, the imperialistic movement and the fascist movement worldwide. The global government. So people or presidents have been taken out way before, starting with Bush Sr. taking out Panama, Tahiti, and all these other nations that were out there, and the presidents of those nations.
Those are good observations, Rock. And the fact of the matter is that Vladimir Putin is being demonized now principally because he has been so successful in promoting BRICS, the British, China, India, Russia, South African financial alternative to the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Putin was just returning from a visit to South America, which had been virtually triumphal, where Latin American and South American leaders had responded extremely positively to the BRICS development. And his plane actually had flown through Ukrainian airspace only about 30 minutes before what is supposed to be Flight 17 was taken down. The claims, of course, initially were that it had been shot down by the Russian separatists. They didn't have weapons that could accomplish the feat, or by the Russians themselves. They certainly didn't do it. In fact, it turns out now that we have pieces of fuselage from the aircraft showing bullet holes from, weapons mounted in aircraft. The two Ukrainian fighters that were accompanying the aircraft appeared to have been responsible for shooting it down. Some of the bullet holes are going in, some of the bullet holes are going out, meaning it was fired from two different directions, bringing the plane down. And this was timed, it appears, to coincide with the Israeli onslaught into Gaza rock. I mean, I think this is very clever, and I have no doubt that Israel was behind creating a massive distraction here. Imagine what would happen if by some set of circumstances Vladimir Putin's plane had been taken out. That would have been a worldwide tragedy, because he's the only figure astride the world stage who represents the interests of peace. The United States, sad to say, the UK, the European Union, NATO, unfortunately no longer represent the desire for peace. And we have so many hawks in key positions in the Obama administration, Samantha Power, Victoria Nuland, Susan Rice, all of whom occupy key positions, that it's very distressing to hear them constantly demonizing Putin and blaming him for actions which were brought about by the Kiev government. Most Americans aren't even aware that we spent $5 billion destabilizing the Ukraine, that we imported Russian weapons so they could be used to fire on the demonstrators to create the false impression that Russia had been responsible, and then, of course, forced the democratically elected leader of the Ukraine to flee. This is all completely outrageous. And yet the American administration recognized the new government, even though it was a puppet government, because, of course, we were behind its installation.
Right. I've got a caller with a question on line one. Craig from Tennessee, go ahead.
Hey, I was just curious. When we, you know, discuss all of this, me as a personal individual, what rights do you think I have to avoid a situation where the cops are so imminent and there's so many of them coming towards me? What do you think are my rights as a civilian, and how do we protect ourselves against this kind of tyranny?
That's a very big question and a very difficult one to answer, because, of course, I mean, the police have the presumption of legal authority to exercise force. I mean, that's something that they are entrusted with by law. So that when the police commit abuses, unless there's a way to regulate those abuses, unless they're inspector generals or internal investigative teams that are going to take serious action to correct it, a great deal of damage, a great deal of harm can take place in the interim, which is exactly what we find in Ferguson. I do believe that Eric Holder, as Attorney General, is serious about wanting to clean this up, even though I'm convinced he was complicit in Sandy Hook. I could elaborate on that in considerable detail. But we've discovered that the official report about Sandy Hook doesn't establish a causal nexus between the alleged shooter, his victims, and the weapons he's supposed to have used. We've discovered that the iconic photograph of the children being led away from the school was, in fact, a staged photograph. And we've even discovered that the one death certificate that's been released by a fellow who describes himself as Lenny Posner, the father of Noah Posner, but whom someone in my research group has spent over 100 hours talking with him about this, is convinced is actually the grandfather, is fabricated. Well, if you got a stage photograph, if you got a fabricated death certificate, if you got a report about Sandy Hook that doesn't establish who did it and how they did it, we know we're dealing with a fraud. And the problem is, here in Ferguson, there seems to be, you know, something very real. Unlike Sandy Hook, where it appears no children died, nor adults for that matter, no one seems to have died at Sandy Hook, we have a real dead a teenager in Ferguson who was lying in the middle of the street and who apparently was shot for committing the offense of being in the middle of the street. I mean, I can't think of anything more offensive and obnoxious than have a police officer firing six or eight rounds. Michael Baden believed that there were two other rounds that had missed, but actually hitting him six times. I mean, for what? This is all completely outrageous.
I would like to ask one more question, if I can. When Sandy Hook happened, there was rumors of an organization by the government that they were doing maneuvers just like Sandy Hook, and there was maneuvers just like 9/11 when it happened. There was maneuvers just in the UK when the UK underground bombings happened.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, it's a common practice to conduct a drill and then have it go live. You're very right about what happened in the London in the 7/7 subway bombings. Nicholas Kullerstrom, who's the author of Terror on the Tube, now in its third edition, is the leading expert on the 7/7 bombings. But you can find the marvelous study by Maud Dibb entitled 7/7 Ripple Effect online. In 1 hour, you'll go from the beginning to the end of the entire event, showing how it was a drill planned for exactly those tube stops, but also involving a bus, how it went live, how the patsies, three young men who were going to be blamed for this, actually were unable to show up. I think they may have been told they were going to just be participating in a drill. They missed the train from Luton, which Nick Kullerstrom was the first to discover,
yep,
which meant they couldn't even be at the tube stops at the time those explosions took place. Real right. Nice case.
Jim, I'm going to have to stop you real quick. We need to go to break real quick. But as I go to break, I just want to say that FEMA was deported the night before 9/11 to New York. So, they were deployed to New York the night before. But anyway, we'll be right back here on the BBS Radio Network with our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsom, and our guest, Jim Fetzer, in just a few minutes.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBS
Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
We're back with our guest, James Fetzer, who has given several interviews on the Michael Brown police shooting in Missouri. We've got a caller on line one. Mike in California.
Professor Fetzer, you've made a lot of comments about so many different topics on here. I thought maybe you'd focus more on the Michael Brown shooting, especially in comparison to another shooting that occurred just a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, Trayvon Martin. It seems to have a great deal of parallel in both that there was a young black man shot by the authorities. Well, in the first case, it was someone who assumed authority, a George Zimmerman, and in this case, an actual police officer. But in both cases, it seems to have Americans racially divided, in that blacks seem to sense that this is a cause for further investigation of racial injustice by authorities. And many whites, on the other hand, feel that place more trust in the system and feel that the investigation isn't really warranted, or that perhaps the authorities did use proper force. You know, there's a discrepancy there. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, of course, it comes from the fact that the system is biased in favor of the white population and biased against the black. The New York Times has just published a new article where Daryl Parks, a lawyer for the family, said the autopsy proved the officer should have been arrested. The bullet that killed Mr. Brown entered at the top of his head and came out through the front and angle that suggests he was facing downward when he was killed, Mr. Parks said. The autopsy did not show what he was doing at the time. Why would he be shot in the very top of his head, a 6'4" man, Mr. Parks said. It makes no sense. And that's what we have. That's why we believe those two things alone are ample for this officer to be arrested. I agree completely with Daryl Parks. The officer should be have been taken into custody. He should be in a jail cell awaiting disposition. That would have done a great deal to reassure the black community that some sort of justice might possibly take place in this case. What we had in Florida, that's unlike here, was the claim that it was a case of stand your ground, where the shooter claimed to have been threatened. I don't happen to believe that, but he had that as an excuse and was able to get a jury to agree with him. There's no way in which an officer who's 35 feet away from this unarmed teenager could possibly employ a defense that is comparable to that. So I actually believe this case in Ferguson is much more clear-cut as an abuse of police authority than was the Trayvon Martin case in Florida.
Well, stand
your
ground.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you have a lot of other callers. Go ahead.
I'm sure we do. Is there any other callers? Okay. Anyways, as I was stating, that stand your ground would mean you stand your ground on your own ground, not in a neighborhood environment where you're following somebody around pretty much stalking. But the shooting by the police officer is absolutely a murder. I don't see it being any different.
Well, the point I'm making, Rock, is that in Florida, he was able to make the appeal that he felt threatened, that if you feel threatened, you're entitled to stand your ground and even to use lethal force if necessary to protect yourself. That's not possible here as a defense for this officer because of the distance from the subject who was killed. I mean, it makes it completely ridiculous. No one would believe it for an instant. So even if a jury in Florida let off the shooter in that instance, I would find it very difficult how a shooter here, how this officer could be let off here. And that's why there's so much upset. You know, it looks like the system is protecting him. We're going to have a grand jury presentation made on Wednesday. That would be tomorrow. And I think it would be very reassuring if it were to issue a bill of indictment against the officer. That would go a long way toward, calming tensions about this case that are swirling today.
Well, I think there wouldn't have been any tensions if they had done the due justice and actually put this officer under arrest instead of just going out there and inciting the protesters. All right, I've got more callers. I've got Honey on line 3. Honey, go ahead.
Yes, I've been listening to what y'all have been talking about. You made some really good, strong points, you know, about it being maybe a racial thing because of what happened a couple of years ago. Well, what I want to say is I think it affects all race. I'm not a black woman. I'm a white woman. And a child, a innocent child, has been murdered. Whether he's red, white, blue, black, or white, that shouldn't be an issue. And it really upsets me to think that you would speak about that for 30 minutes when the black race is not the only race that lives in that city.
Well, you're absolutely right.
You know,
I mean, no one.
And also, he was, you know, dispatched out to the call. Why did he not have backup?
Right. Well, let me respond to you real quick. And the point that Mr. Fetzer is trying to make is this is pretty much deliberately done in a sense to create hysteria within the people, and it creates pretty much a scenario to impose martial law in certain areas. And when they impose martial law, it means that they can go in and disarm the public. And, you know, okay. this goes okay. against the Constitution. It goes against the Second Amendment. So this is pretty much the scenario that is being set up. We're seeing this happen, and it happened in Boston. It happened in Sandy Hook. You know, they shut down Boston within the matter of minutes and imposed martial law in Boston. But we didn't hear about that.
Exactly.
We didn't hear about that on the mainstream media. So this is the point that Mr. Fetzer
was trying. I understand that. Exactly, we didn't. But I'm sure out of these other cases, they were backups. They were only one officer, you know. And that's why I find it odd. You know, this kid has gotten killed. You know, an officer has gotten injured or whatever, and I just can't understand why there were no backup for this officer. I'm not justifying him killing that boy. I think it's wrong. I think it's immoral. I think he should get whatever comes to him he deserves. You know, I am not taking up for that man at all, because I don't think being innocent, you would shoot somebody in the head. I'm just stating my opinion. That's all.
Why would he need backup? He was having an encounter from 35 feet with a young man who was in the.
Didn't he have a friend with him, and wasn't it supposed robbery because he had stolen some cigars?
There was no knowledge of that robbery at the time. The officer did not know it. It's not even. It's not. It's not.
No, it was. You know. You see what I mean? How does this police officer know what he's pulling up to? How does he know it's just one person?
Well,
you know, do they just guess it and just do that? You know,
it was
no,
evident,
I'm,
it was
I'm not buying that.
Exactly. It was evident that it was just Michael Brown and the officer. So it is, you know, just complete murder.
Let me reiterate, there's video out there that suggests that he paid for the cigars or whatever it was in the store, that he did not steal the cigars. And besides, the officer had no idea.
That's hearsay.
Right.
That's hearsay. He bought it. So, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just.
Yes.
I'm telling you, you know, what's coming on with the media and what others are saying, you know, because I wasn't there. I didn't see it go down, and neither did anybody else.
Right. We
so
agree.
I'm just
but we're just
my
going,
opinion,
we're
that's
going
all.
By, we're going by the stories that have been put out to us, and we're going by what people are saying. Okay. I've got line one, Michael, go ahead.
Hello guys. This is Michael from TNT Board. But, you know, I would like to just say this whole thing is, you could see those who study, and hello, Jim Fetzer. I want to say hello from Veterans Day.
Thank you. They
are trying to cause a race war. And you could see this happening. I just want to say real quick, before I ask the question, I lived in Compton, California for 8 months with 10 blacks, one Mexican, and me, a white guy. I had no problem. Just one guy was a little whacked out. But besides that, I used to walk down the street, Compton Boulevard, where the Metro Rails are. I'm now in Arkansas, but I lived there. And you used to go to the store, and you used to have to take all your backpacks, if you had a purse or anything, And there was a police officer inside the grocery store. And, you know, you would have to give your stuff up and just carry a wallet. But this is kind of gets to what I'm talking about here. A police officer on Upstream Sunday night, and I'd like to get you your observation on this, Fetzer. A guy from the new, media was filming the riots and everything, and watching the police slowly go forward, and a police officer comes up and points the gun at the media guy. She's filming, doing the Upstream, and says, "Turn off that light, or I'll shoot you." And I heard that, and I was watching.
Was that in Ferguson?
Yes.
Well, that's completely outrageous. You know, that's completely outrageous. You know, that the media should be hassled and harassed. That's completely outrageous. In fact, I heard the same thing happen with two reporters over the weekend, too, who weren't even in Ferguson proper, but in the immediate vicinity, who are confronted by a police officer who ordered them out of the area. I mean, that's a violation of the First Amendment. The reporters must be on the scene to let the people know what's going on. So, you know, I agree with you completely that that's outrageous misconduct by the police and should not be tolerated. It needs to be publicized and condemned.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree 100%. And one more question real quick, and that is, have you guys heard about that the KKK has actually gotten together with going over to Ohio and doing a two-day fundraiser, and then, you know, going on down to Ferguson to supposedly, according to this post, to protect the white store owners? And, go ahead.
I haven't heard that, but it's very disturbing. I mean, the KKK originated in a town in Indiana, and it is the case that when we're in difficult economic times, that there can be resentment between groups, when you're struggling for resources, and it wouldn't surprise me if there were some kind of resurgence of the KKK under the socioeconomic conditions that obtain today. But it would be a very, you know, bad thing, not a welcome development, but an unfortunate one.
All right. I've got Jason from Texas online, too. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on. Oh, I'm Instant Karma in the room if anybody's interested. But, I had a couple of comments to make about the entire situation, and this one's kind of endemic of all. This one can kind of be implied to all of the, you know, no peace, no justice, no peace rioters out there. But they need to have some types of rules of engagement. I mean, I think one of them should be, well, here I am playing armchair quarterback, not being in the mix of everything. But I believe one of these rules should be is, like, don't destroy private property. Jane just said something in the room to this effect, but the way that I look at it is, why are you going to take out your anger and your rage and your resentment on Foot Locker or Quickie Mart or the liquor store or whatever? I mean, these private businesses serve your community. They're not the ones hurting you. The way I see it, it's the municipality that's hurting you. I mean, their strong-armed Stasi thugs are the ones that are out there using deadly force with basically no repercussions and are hurting the community. And everybody has to remember, they are the strong-arm enforcement branch of their government, in this case, their local city and county government. So I believe that your municipality should be what is being held. I mean, instead of trashing the liquor store, I think people should start with the parking meters, move on to the red light cameras, start flipping over police cars, and then if you haven't made your point yet, move on to City Hall. I mean, the way I see it, if you're going to lash out and fight, lash out and fight at the entity that has hurt you.
I mean, I agree with you, but good luck finding City Hall in that neighborhood.
You know, a number of the talk about following rules. A number of the protesters have observed that the rules have been changing by the authorities. For example, now they have a curfew. Now they don't have a curfew. Now they have these the state police. Now you have the National Guard. I mean, the increase in the degree of force present is inherently bad all by itself. In fact, I was watching videos where, you know, there was a very peaceful protest, and all of a sudden the police show up with all their militarized gear and chaos ensued. I mean, this is unnecessary provocation by the authorities. Let the people peacefully demonstrate. They have that right under the Constitution, a peaceful assembly. This is a case where that ought to be practiced. Let the people speak. Of course, no one is endorsing the damaging of shops or theft or looting or anything of that kind. It is unfortunately an almost inevitable consequence of a situation remotely like this and is deplorable. But that does not mean that the police need to overreact and bring out all their heavy equipment, which I think has been a major problem here. The apparent overreaction by the police with this massive militarized presence is a real serious aspect of this entire situation, part of why it's spun out of control.
Well, both of the previous callers had good points, and I think it was Honey that brought up the fact that she basically said, what was this one single cop, you know, basically doing, trying to apprehend two people, and especially if one of them was like a 6'4", 300-pound guy.
But he wasn't trying to apprehend.
I think that was a hothead. Well, hang on. I think that guy was just being a little bit hotheaded because, I mean, as you guys had mentioned earlier, I just read an article before the show that they didn't even have the camera footage until Friday. I mean, nobody at the store called in the arrest. Basically, a hotheaded cop saw two people walking down the street, tried to harass them for jaywalking, and I think Honey had a good point. Anytime a cop is outclassed like that, he should have radioed in and not have acted with backup. And yeah, there are conflicting reports, but I mean, you hear stories from a number of witnesses that the guy tells them, get the F out of the street, passes them in the car, backs up, and there's a struggle where the cop and Brown are supposedly grappling with each other through the window. I mean, that is just bad operating procedure for police on all fronts. And the response hasn't even, and the response hasn't been any better. I mean, just today, there was a man that they said had a knife. They were saying he was a reported looter, and he ended up being shot by the police. But I have this question. What happened to all these non-lethal weapons that we have? I mean, what about all these tasers? I mean, come on, they brought Adam Lanza in alive. I mean, you can look at footage from, I mean, there is this cop in Germany, in one of those little YouTube clips that I'd seen, that there was a man approaching him with a samurai sword and the machete. The cop fired his weapon, shot the guy in the leg, was able to disarm the man and bring him in. I mean, what happened to all these non-lethal weapons? Where's the pepper spray? You know,
well,
where are the tasers at? Why are they shooting first?
They're being taught deadly force. They're not being taught to disarm. They're not being taught to cripple. They're being taught deadly force. They're being taught to shoot center mass and tap twice. Just like the so-called fake tap twice of Osama bin Laden.
A minor correction. Adam Lanza allegedly committed suicide. He wasn't taken alive.
Right.
In fact, there's a real question whether Adam Lanza even existed. There are a lot of weird things that go on there about Sandy Hook. But to stay with Ferguson, I mean, I saw some of those vehicles, and they had these big dishes on top.
I might have been talking about the Aurora shooter that they brought in alive. I get all
the
crazy white
Aurora.
Oh, you
said Adam Lanza. I misunderstood. Listen, they had a couple of vehicles.
Yeah, well, I didn't misquote that. I have the two guys mixed up in my head.
Yeah, okay. There were a couple of vehicles there with big dishes on them. Those appear to be microwave weapons that are used for crowd control. I don't know that they've actually been employed, but they were present.
No, I've heard that those are the LRAD devices. Those are supposedly, basically those loud acoustic devices that they're supposed to be using up for crowd control. One of the most interesting perspectives on this that I've read.
The ones that I've seen did not look like LRAD. LRAD looked like speakers. That actually looked like a partial of the, you know, smaller form of the microwave gun. The LRAD are speakers.
Yeah, as far as I understand, LRAD, I think physically they just look like, you know, basically a big square. I mean, you know, kind of like a flat plane unidirectional antenna almost.
Correct.
Thank you for calling in. You raised a good point.
Yes, he did. And we want to thank you also, and of course we're running out of time and I've got a few minutes left. I just needed to say this, and I found a very, very awesome quote today. And that quote was by a young Indian lady by the name of Arundhati Roy. It says our strategy should not only be to confront the empire and lay it to siege, to deprive it of its oxygen, to shame it, to mock it with our art, our music, our literature, our stubbornness, our joy, our brilliance, our sheer relentlessness, our ability to tell our own stories that are different from the ones we're being brainwashed to believe. And with that being said, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this evening. Thank you, James Fetzer, and thank you for listening to us on the BBS Radio Network. And thank you, Don Newsom. Good evening.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.